Welcome to the Fed Mission Success Podcast Series. 2023 is certainly shaping up to be the year of ChatGPT. It's reached near ubiquity in the news. I'm sure everybody's heard about it. There's a lot of implications. There's a lot going on with it. And today we're speaking with Peter Pro-Francesco, who's an innovation engineer at MacBar, Justin Torlone, who's the senior IT manager, and we're also joined by Faria Khan, who's the communications and marketing manager at MacBar, to really talk about what has led up to ChatGPT, potential use cases around it when it comes to IT development, and probably much, much more. And Peter, Justin, and Faria, how y'all doing today?
Doing well, doing well.
Yeah, great. Wow. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Faria, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm excited to talk about ChatGPT, and I hope it doesn't take my job.
Yes, likewise. I think we're all feeling that way these days. And actually, before we get into really what's going on with ChatGPT now, I would love to throw this out to Peter and Justin. Like, what developments really led up to ChatGPT, and what was its original intent? For me, as a humble PR and content marketer, I didn't hear about it until probably after the Christmas holiday break, because I know it launched, I think, in November. So this just came out of nowhere for me. But for you guys, I'm sure you've been tracking this. This is probably a long time coming, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Justin, did you want to field this one first?
No, I think this is all you, Peter.
All right.
And how we got to where we are.
All right. So just to go back to 1964. The first chatbot, Eliza, coming out of MIT. Originally, it was created to demonstrate the superficiality of communication between humans and machines. So the Eliza simulated conversation using pattern matching and substitution methodology that gave users an illusion of understanding on the part of the program, but it had no framework for contextualizing events. So this kind of goes hand in hand with the Turing test that came out in 1950. So the whole thing with the Turing test is it is a conversation between a human and a AI that it's essentially trying to trick people into thinking that it's a human. And if it can trick, you know, I believe it's 30% of those people, then it would be considered to pass the Turing test. Part of the big deal about ChatGPT is that it passes the Turing test, but it is, in fact, the second to pass. The first was Google's Lambda AI, which passed the Turing test, I believe, in 2022 during the summer. Now, you know, that kind of gets into people aren't really considering the Turing test as like the standard anymore. The other test that people are kind of turning towards would be the Winograd schema. And part of the reason that they are transitioning to Winograd schemas is because it requires cultural knowledge, which is something that would be very difficult for computers. So going through the timeline, you've got Eliza, you've got then Watson, which was a big deal when it appeared on Jeopardy against the champions. And I believe it won first place there. But the most important thing here would be Google's Transformer architecture, which came out in 2017, right? And so currently there are two prominent frameworks for generative AI. There's the generative adversarial network and the generative pre-trained transformer, which is what the GPT and ChatGPT stands for, generative pre-trained transformer. Now, what the generative pre-trained transformer, you know, the importance of that one is previous to this, the encoder deep decoder architecture in transformer architecture required convolution or recurrence in order to generate an output. And the ERT or transformer architecture only relies on a self-attention mechanism to generate that output. And I'm sure I missed a whole bunch. I mean, we could go down. There was, you know, GPT-1 came out before ERT. But then there was GPT-2, GPT-3, there was BlenderBot, Mina, there was the Megatron Turing. I'm sure I could just go down a list here of all of these things that came out.
That's awesome, Peter. Yeah, I really appreciate that breakdown there. And I mean, it's really like, caught on like wildfire, like everywhere. And, you know, we certainly know the perils of it, or at least in our paranoid minds, all of us concerned about our jobs.
you know the perils of it, but there are use cases too as well, especially when it comes to IT development. And Justin, would love your take on that.
Yeah, so I mean, even from an IT perspective, I've been using it a lot, but I've actually been using it more for the business side of things than I have been using it for IT. And simply because the IT stuff, you know, I feel like that's second nature to me, but the business stuff is where I really struggle when I need to ingest a bunch of different requirements and spit out a summary so that my brain can understand and summarize a document, right? We work with the federal government. So when we get a request for quote and the massive list of requirements staring you in the face, who better to ask than ChatGPT? Say, hey, summarize this in a, you know, professional bullet points so that I can quickly catch up on the topic. And ChatGPT will read a document or a pasted piece of a document, spit out a great summary for me to then go back and say, okay, is this technically feasible? Is this something our team can do? Is this something that we should go after? You know, and then I'm able to make the decision on, hey, should we go after this contract or not? Just based on a quick summary from a lot of information. And it takes me 30 seconds to do. Whereas before, I would have to read an entire RFP, RFQ, RFI, which potentially could be anywhere from 20 to 50 pages. Now it's 30 seconds of my time, copy and paste in a few questions.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. You know, not to sidetrack here, but the loop in Faria, I did some test runs on it yesterday just to say, you know, write a blog post about, I don't know, it might have been government IT or something related to another client, and it spit out something that was pretty good. I mean, it didn't feel like it had much of a human element to it, but, you know, I think in many ways, this can help at least lay the groundwork, like you said, Justin, for doing that research or getting that background. But, you know, in the end, I think it still needs the human touch,
exactly.
At least from the Markov. It's probably the same for IT too. For real, love your take on this too. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? You got to be careful because it does just spit out things that you've given it, which sometimes the user can give the wrong intel. Or because it is also looking at natural language, you can also use the wrong grammar and it will have an ill effect in this manner. That's probably for another topic. That's a whole other topic. Go ahead, Faria. Sorry for jumping in there.
No. You know what's really interesting is I'm actually pretty skeptical of technology in this way, because as a person, I feel like, you know, in this increasingly digital world, the thing we're constantly missing is human connection. And the further we get away from that, I think it causes a lot of social problems. That's one of my interests that isn't related to what we do here at MACPAR, but I think that is true. And okay, this is an interesting example is I was working with Justin and we're working on rewriting our mission statement. And Justin was like, let's just get ChatGPT to do it. So we input some stuff to see what ChatGPT would say. And then he read it out to me and I was like, it sounds like a robot wrote that. And then we did, like, as a team, we went through this whole exercise of trying to, like, rewrite our mission statement together. And it was, like, collaborative and exciting. And we were asking each other what makes us get up in the morning. And there was a real human element, like, woven into it. And I think what we came up with was so much more interesting. And I've also, like, read a couple articles, you know, in the past year or so, like, and Peter and Justin, let me know what you think of this, where there's experts that say, oh, no, AI isn't at risk of taking our jobs just yet. Like maybe in the future, but we're not close to that yet. So I don't know. I personally think the human touch and the human element can be underrated in this world where we're constantly just trying to go as fast as we can and produce as much as we can. So I'm probably always going to be the person to caution and say, we need to all go touch grass, as they say on the internet. Oh. And not robots control our lives.
So I agree with that to a degree. I would say that in the future, the ability to interact with these generative language models is going to be a necessity. So, you know, as you're talking about with like development speed or production speed, I think ChatGPT has this enormous ability to augment human development. You know, you can, especially in programming and things like that, you know, not to delve too far away from the topic, but, you know, we've been using it in the sense of Terraform modules, you know, testing it out there, testing it out with programming languages we are not the strongest with yet, and seeing what it produces. That way we can focus in on, okay, we know we shouldn't hard code credentials. We know we're developing these patterns of, okay, we know ChatGPT produces good things here. We know that it probably needs to be corrected here. And, you know, the quote unquote paired programming, to use, you know, the agile terminology, I think is where it really shines, at least, you know, as it is right now. But as I was saying, you know, in the future, if you do not have competency in interacting with something like ChatGPT, then there is a likelihood that, you know, you will get pushed out of your industry. So I wouldn't say that ChatGPT replaces us. It is definitely just a skill to add to your toolbox.
Yeah, interesting. And how can this apply to Matt Hart's clients? Because you mentioned, you know, going into new programming languages that you might not be as strong in. Like, what's the benefit for Matt Hart's
client? Actually, before we jump into that, I had a question for Pariya on the societal impact and things like that. So, you know, you were talking about this human touch and things like that. What would you say about the use case that people were suggesting to use ChatGPT as kind of like a personal therapist?
Whoa, interesting. Never heard of that one.
You know, I am skeptical of that because, you know, I don't want to get political here on the podcast, but like, you know, therapy and things like that, it's already really hard to come by with our current healthcare system because it's privatized. And also often therapists don't take insurance, so you have to pay out of pocket. So to get quality healthcare in that way, especially mental health care, is very challenging in this country. And I think I've seen how there's apps that advertise, you know, getting a therapist easily through the app, and you can chat on the app. But I've also heard a lot of disappointments on that. And it can feel a bit exploitative of people that, you know, in the system don't have a full-time job and don't have insurance and don't have access to resources that would help them talk to someone they really need to be talking to. I don't know. I find it a bit exploitative. I don't think a robot can help us resolve our emotional issues the way that a trained therapist and a person can. I think human connection is probably one of the most healing bombs for all of our problems. And I don't think robots are going to replace that. I think that's one use case where robots aren't going to come in, you know, to achieve that, because there's just a different element to person connection that can't be commodified, honestly.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I actually thought accessibility was the good part about that, where a lot of people lack the accessibility, as you said. And, you know, it could even be a case where somebody, you know, with COVID and all of that, everyone went through this long period of isolation where it could almost be scary to have that one-on-one human interaction about something you're feeling very vulnerable about. And it seems like almost this could be a good way to kind of dip your toe in the water, as it was. But yeah, very interesting. I'm sorry to cut you off, Matt. If you want to, what was the question again?
No worries, Peter. No, we designed this podcast to be a little different than our other ones. This is really just an open forum for us to really talk about this, because, you know, it is everywhere. And other societal implications, before we talk about kind of benefits for Mac, our clients, are that, you know, there's a lot of white collar jobs that are decimated in the next 2 to 3 years. That's going to be a huge challenge on everything from tax revenue. I've heard people say we're going to need universal basic income across the board. He's going to pay for it. So, you know, in the wee hours of the night when I wake up and I can't fall back asleep, my mind spins on these things that could be huge, or maybe we're just all being paranoid. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
You know, I think there is, from a security side, I can think of some worries. ChatGPT is great at English. And what are scammers not so good at in your email, or people trying to phish us? Well, it's writing emails, it's writing scams, figuring out, you know, what your son's birthday is based off of a bunch of information they could find online about you. So where I think ChatGPT is going to get paranoid for some and, you know, kind of scary for others is that scammers and people that want to inflict technological damage in your life are now going to have a tool in which they can pump information into about you and then have it generate information about you and automate a process of, well, we can write emails to make them specific, to make you think that your mom is compromised, you know, things like that. So I don't actually know exactly where the security side of this thing goes, but I do think that there's a worry to improve scammers and especially their language. I think it's a big
part. And to circle back, talking about the IT stuff. So with ChatGPT, what I was talking about with, you know, maybe programming languages you aren't as strong in, it lowers the barrier to entry to coding. And if somebody has the will or, you know, ill intent to write, you know, malware of some sort, but they just don't have the skills, well, now that barrier to entry is lowered and we're probably going to see far more malware written now. ChatGPT, we're in a demo the other day for the National Use Case and Solutions Library. And they have implemented something that identifies people writing malware. And that was just recent. But, you know, during the demonstration, the person was showing that, you know, it's not a perfect system. If you phrase things in a certain way or you ask for things a certain way, you can still get around that system. So, you know, it's not just scammers, you know, being able to write a little bit better or write more directly to your interests, but it's also everything that goes along with it. You know, I really think that a lot of like the government use cases in the coming years are going to be trying to identify material that was generated by an AI. You know, ChatGPT or OpenAI was talking about introducing a watermarking system where that they are going to have it write in certain patterns, you know, for lack of a better phrasing, creating like a cipher within the way that they write that can be easily identified by other AI or by other, you know, statistical identification systems. But, you know, the kind of issue with that is that the more prevalent ChatGPT becomes in our life, the more people are going to speak like ChatGPT. So at a certain point, you know, you're kind of creating your own problem there.
Yeah, crazy. Sharia, what are your thoughts about some of like the larger or at least unthought of implications? Because one thing from the marketing communications perspective, you and I spend a lot of time creating content. And like I said, I tested out doing like a government IT blog post and it was pretty generic. And if every other government IT provider, their marketing department is using ChatGPT to write a blog post about zero trust or whatever it may be, it's all going to look exactly the same. It's all going to be homogenized and not good. And maybe that's me just being hopeful, you know, that I'm still needed. But I don't know. For real, I would love your take.
You know, I think, Matt, that you are needed. And I think that we offer really valuable service. I think I still, you know, I guess I'm really playing the role here of the skeptic because I don't think that those articles that the robot's going to write about zero trust are going to be very interesting. I feel like they would be very standard and maybe boring. You know, it's a robot. But I think we're working with experts, and as we're talking to them, we're really digging into answers and questions that we have. And I think we're getting to more interesting content. So unless they really upgrade the technology to have that kind of human touch, I don't know. I still think that we offer a very valuable service. Maybe all of our competitors could write their blog posts using ChatGPT and we could still have higher quality blog posts. I don't know. Maybe that would ding us on the algorithm. You know, in terms of SEO and stuff, I'm not sure anymore. Honestly, I'm really not sure.
I think the output that you're going to get, and this is, again, it goes back to what Peter was saying at the beginning, it's going to be a skill to use this tool. You're not going to get the generic outputs that we get are because of the generic inputs you put in. You can go over and reiterate the same paragraph 10 times until you would no longer recognize that ChatGPT wrote that paragraph. But it does take some added, you know, prompts from your end to say, okay, make a few spelling mistakes. Okay, now add inflection. Okay, now remove 5 words from the sentence and rewrite it. And these are things that you can do to make ChatGPT look like a human wrote it. And you can even add like slang words too. And it would always seem like a human wrote it. And it would be really hard to tell. But a lot of times what we're seeing is that people accept the first prompt that it spits out, much like that mission statement you talked about earlier. That was the first try. We sat there and we reiterated through it like we did as a group. We would have had a better written mission statement, even from ChatGPT. But we used the first result. We didn't go and reiterate through it like we needed to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And when I'm working with ChatGPT just to see what kind of code it can spit out, things like that, you know, you can ask it to refactor itself. And, you know, it having that in-session memory where it knows what you've spoken about previously. And so you could just sit there and, you know, I mentioned, you know, hard coding credentials earlier. You know, if it spits something out, you can just say, can you refactor to remove hard coded credentials? And it will do just that. So, you know, just kind of in support of Justin on that one.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. Really interesting stuff.
Peter, did we cover off on how this applies to Matterport clients? I know
we're improvising a bit more on this one, which is totally far than Faria. We might have to rethink our podcast in general and make it more like this format. But anyhow, Peter, did we skip
that? I'm not sure, but there's plenty probably still to talk about there. How it applies to our clients. There are two different directions. The first is faster production of code, more standardized production, the ability to produce faster. That'll apply to every single aspect of our business. You know, so in a general sense, that's probably the biggest, but a lot of the work that we are going to be doing is going to be identifying AI-generated material, or it is going to be related to the security aspects of the AI generated material. I'm trying to think just off the top of my head, you know, as let's take a code challenge, for example, a lot of the proposal process and things like that, they're going into these code challenge kind of shootouts, you know, if you've made it past the first or second stage. And so something that we've been working on is just a code challenge tech stack written in the Terraform CDK. Now, the Terraform CDK doesn't have great documentation. It's not quite a fully mature cloud development kit in the same way, say, the AWS cloud development kit is, but they are creating an adapter for the AWS CDK for Terraform. And, you know, just Terraform's kind of ubiquitous in a lot of senses when it comes to infrastructure as code. And having that cloud development kit to add Python logic or TypeScript logic to, you know, interact with Terraform is very, very helpful. But as I mentioned, with the lack of documentation or examples, you know, it can be kind of difficult. There's that barrier to entry, right? And I don't want to spend all day Googling around, looking through GitHub repositories, trying to find exactly what I need. And so, you know, I can go to ChatGPT and say, hey, how would you write, you know, X resources in Terraform CDK? Now, you know, as previously mentioned, that output is certainly not going to be perfect. It's going to require a fair amount of editing, but it is also going to save me a bunch of time going through these GitHubs, trying to figure out exactly which resources are going to be needed, exactly, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm going to get to the point or get to the, you know, the important part of that coding much, much faster. Or when it comes to troubleshooting, you know, not to complain about AWS, but a lot of the time when you're getting an error from their command line or you're getting an error back for, you know, in your CloudWatch logs or something like that, that error that is stated is not the most representative of what is actually going on. And again, the AWS documentation can be a little bit out of date, sometimes up to 2 to 3 years for certain things. And so again, I don't want to spend all of this time trying to sift through pages and pages and pages of documentation when I could go to ChatGPT and say, hey, I'm getting this error. How would you troubleshoot this? And so, you know, again, it probably won't give me a perfect answer, probably won't give me exactly the answer, but it'll certainly get me started in a direction without me having to sift through all the useless stuff. You know, but the flip side of that is Stack Overflow just banned generated or AI generated material, not just because of the sheer volume that is coming in, but because a lot of times it seems reasonable, but is wrong in several ways. So there, to the human touch in coding, there is a real expertise required to identify exactly what's wrong and what is actually correct. Other than that, Justin, did you have anything you wanted to throw on top there?
No, I mean, I think it goes right into the regenerating the responses and fixing what you're trying to ask, because in Stack Overflow, someone poses a question but doesn't have enough background information. ChatGPT is only going to fill in the blanks. It's not going to know everything this person knows, right? And so that's the same with anything that in this model. And actually, to go back to the use case idea, Matt, is IT documentation and service management, right? So our clients, you know, from a always need documentation, they need our help when we go in and we give a new technology out or integrate something or stand up two systems together. Well, there's a lot of documentation as a result. And these chatbots can be really good at ingesting documentation and regurgitating based off of user questions. I think that's another really useful case for ChatGPT. And then another one that we could talk about at Amazon, they're getting rid of all their low-end developers. They're just going to let them go because high-end developers can now have ChatGPT as their assistant. No longer do we need a low-end developer.
Yeah.
It's already happening.
And I thought about this too, and this is separate from our world, but like law firms, don't they have associates do hours and hours of research?
Oh, yeah. Law? Well, and so on, in, you know, within law, or the other thing I was thinking about was grant writing or just, you know, submitting for grants. You know, I would have loved having ChatGPT in school when I was submitting for a grant. And I'm sure that systems like our courts or the people evaluating for these grant proposals, they are going to be overwhelmed with material. Because it, like you're saying, if you're able to produce faster, then you could just absolutely overwhelm a system. You know, it might change the requirements of our infrastructure over time just because of sheer volume of data coming in.
Yeah.
I think that's always been a problem. We evaluate people on how they can write and how they look before they even walk in the door. And so maybe this is a good thing. Maybe this is a good change for society in that way. Because
it reminds me. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I was going to say, put people on equal playing field, right? I didn't go to college, but I'd be willing to put my brains up against someone that did in if we had the same position, right? And with and without ChatGPT. You know,
yeah, I was going to say, I would put you up against anybody. Yeah,
it'd be hard to tell the difference. Right.
Fair. Okay, so like I was going to say, it reminds me of, you know, nanotechnology, right? In material sciences, you know, there was a saying when we were going through school where they were just going through like incident report of people getting seriously hurt, where the safety for a technology or the security for a technology is always about 20 years behind where the technology actually is. And so, you know, in nanotechnology, it was a lot of lab deaths, unfortunately. But, you know, the societal impact or the, you know, blast zone from ChatGPT is going to be so much bigger, you know, maybe not in physical safety, but, you know, just what it represents.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy stuff. Well, this has been an awesome podcast. I know we wanted to do a series of these, but I think we've unpacked a lot in this first one in our kind of new, more informal format here. We have probably about 15 more minutes to go if we want to use this time. I just wanted to throw it all out there. Should we talk about, I don't know, future implications if we have not fully already? You know, all that kind of good stuff. I think we did talk about dangers. I'm looking at back at our original question. So I guess we're almost at the point where, I don't know, anything else we may have missed? Anything else you want to unpack here today?
Not too much from my end. I'd really just to reiterate, when we're talking about the future of IT development or their jobs and roles, I think the ability to interact with ChatGPT and get good responses out of it, or even how to apply it in an automated fashion. You know, like just, I can't remember the exact study I was looking at, but you know, when it was taking a look at the government workforce, it was saying something like 30 to 40% of the government workforce is working highly automatable tasks. Right. And so it's not even just like, okay, I'm working in a paired programming sense with ChatGPT, but also, you know, having that API where I can just insert it into my infrastructure, you know, just from like a CI/CD standpoint where, you know, we have things set up where I can make an API call request and, you know, just give it a series of parameters and say, hey, I need a pipeline that does X, Y, and Z. It's going to be in this region. It's going to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of having very exact parameters, I have to make like a post call with the API. I can just make a human language request to ChatGPT and have it handle that configuration for me. As long, you know, the flip side of that is it doesn't know it's wrong. So there's got to be some level of standardization or, you know, repeatability to those tasks where we know it can perform within a certain accuracy. But as it progresses, it is going to become ubiquitous in almost every aspect of our lives.
Yeah. Wow. Justin, any parting thoughts?
Nothing at this moment in time. I think I'll come back with the next part of the series and come back with more. I always think that things like Siri or Google, they're going to get better, right? So I look forward to automating my personal life a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree. Rhea, are you still with us? Are you still around? I wanted to see if you had any parting comments.
I guess my only parting comment is I totally, you know, I feel like I'm learning a lot from what Peter and Justin are sharing. And I'm just questioning if we write off the human ability to create some of the tasks. I mean, some of the tasks, yeah, it's great to automate those and it will make life easier. But I think just completely ignoring the human touch, I think would be a huge mistake. And that makes me feel skeptical and sad about the future. But I don't think it's so black and white. So it's an interesting discussion for sure.
Yeah, it really is. And we will certainly keep this going. And I definitely want to replicate this more. And probably, let's say we record another podcast in 2 weeks, there'll probably be 10 more news stories about it or new use cases or new ways that we didn't realize that it's going to impact our lives because it's moving that fast. And I think we'll wrap this up then. Hope you all enjoyed this Fed Mission Success podcast interview with Peter Cofrancesco, who is the innovation engineer at MACHAR, Justin Torlone, who's the senior IT manager, and of course, Maria Khan, who is the marketing and communications manager at MACHAR. And this was a fun, candid conversation really about what's going on with ChatGPT, and every day is a new, exciting opportunity, challenge, and fear for many of us. And Peter, Justin, and Drea, really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks, guys.